That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
What? That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and let me tell you something. I was straight when I saw my first Broadway show at 17 years old, and a year later, I came out as a homosexual. What was that show? It was The Drowsy Chaperone. So wait, who do I blame? The cast of The Drowsy Chaperone, specifically The Drowsy Chaperone herself, Beth Level, who is this week's guest. Now, Beth is currently in her 15th Broadway show, the Sondheim Review Old Friends, and she's also been on Broadway in 42nd Street, Mamma Mia, the original cast of Crazy for You, The Prom. The list is just insane. So please enjoy this very special episode, and trigger warning, I do get a little emosh at the end of the interview, but can you blame me? This woman made me gay. Here's Beth Level. Listen up, Beth Level. We've got a lot to unpack and a lot to discuss. And you are on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Beth, has your day been gay at all, or has it been devastatingly straight?
It's been devastatingly straight. So you better change my world or I have to go.
Oh, and you better buckle the brunch up, Beth,
because
we're about to be gay as hell. You know what's really gay, Beth, is that you choose to fly to St. Louis every summer to do shows at the Muni in 400 degrees heat, which happens to be the hometown of myself and gay ass producer Nathaniel. Beth Level, you finish a 3-hour production in 99 degree heat. What is the cocktail you're ordering to just say goodbye to the rest of the world and feel twirly?
Glass of very chilled California Chardonnay.
And are you gossiping with the cast or are you by yourself?
The last time I was at the Muni, which I am not going this summer because I'm doing my Broadway skit, ding dang it. But the last time I was at the Muni, I was playing Mama Rose and Gypsy, and my husband, Adam Heller, who's there.
Shut up.
Playing Herbie. So we would go and gossip. And Julia Nitel, who is killing it in Dead Outlaw, played my daughter.
It was a Broadway in Missouri moment.
Yeah, and it was hot. It's hot. I find that I go to the Muni and they put me in lots of costumes. I did Hello Dolly, and I remember it was one of those heat waves, as you were, you know, familiar with. And at the end of Before the Parade Passes By, I started seeing like white spots. I'm like, you are not fainting on my watch. Don't do it, sister. So I got off and went to intermission. You hydrate.
Can you imagine fainting in front of 11,000 people?
Can you imagine? I get a lot of Broadway star Beth Level's last performance.
You saw the headline in front of your eyes.
Yeah. Yes. Like I'm not, no, not on my watch.
Beth, on this gay ass podcast, we of course need to talk about so much of your Broadway history, but also I want to get into some drama llama from your past. So let's get into it. You have done, now you're on your 15th Broadway show.
Yes.
And it is called Old Friends, a bit of a Stephen Sondheim review. But before you did Old Friends, you did do Elf the Musical.
I did. Now, why are you going to Elf? I love that.
Because I myself did Elf the Musical on tour.
You did?
I did. And I always wondered what it would be like to sit in the audience to hear you scream belt, "There is a Santa Claus." Now, controversial question number one, were you annoyed that little kid got a higher note than you on the harmony?
Okay, controversial answer number one. I was supposed to sing that note. And I went, you know what? 8 shows a week, that D sharp or whatever the flip it is. I said, it is not going to happen. Maybe he can sing it. So
maybe the 8-year-old can.
And everyone, you can't tell the difference of who's singing the note. So I think, sadly, I get credit for that. Meanwhile, bless his heart, he's hyperventilating, trying to hold that note as long as I am, because that's, mama likes to do that.
Yeah, so, but he's been alive for all of 2 seconds. He doesn't know what hard work is yet. So why don't you let the kid take the brunt?
I did. And
you did.
You know, I did it Elf twice, and both times the kid was able to, bless their heart. They'd look at me, they'd be all red. It's like, can we stop? It's like, hang on. Oh, cinema.
Well, honestly, the only time I thought I was going to pass out on in front of an audience was during Elf the Musical, because I was famously the buddy character who loses weight every time he does the show because he's just running. But I remember a cast member like started to laugh when she saw me like making weird faces at her because I flubbed a line because I was about to pass out. But girlina, I had a Coca-Cola backstage and yes. got those shoes back on and slapped yes. the tights and said, "Sparkle, twinkle, chinkle, jolly Lee."
So glad I wasn't in that number. No offense.
Offended. No offense taken. But listen, Beth, I know that you're thinking, wait, this gay guy on this podcast, the first question is about Elf the Musical. So let's actually get into some more Broadway lore. You did 42nd Street as your Broadway debut in 1980.
Uh-uh. Incorrect. I didn't move to New York until the end of 81.
Okay.
So I did the first national tour of 42nd Street first in 1984. I was out for about 7 months and the role of Anytime Annie opened up on the Broadway and they asked would I join. And so I had joined in like 1984. I think it was 84, maybe okay, 85.
Look, me getting canceled 2 minutes in. Well, listen. Hey,
wrong, Eric.
Well, I know that famously David Merrick worked on this show and he was married 6 times to 5 women.
I'll tell you, by the time I met Mr. Merrick, he had had that stroke.
Wheelchair bound.
But we always knew when he was in the audience because never failed, the next day someone would be fired. So even if he'd had a stroke and couldn't communicate, he could still go, okay. And people were let go every time he came to the show.
So when he was there, you made sure like you were on your mark as a.
And I really hope that he didn't think I was his wife, Karen Prunznik, who originated the role of Anytime Annie. It's like, I'm not her. I don't even know how long they were married, but I kept thinking, I wonder if he thinks I'm his ex-wife, but never found out.
So interesting that you've worked with all these big personalities. I mean, is there like, when you look back on the Broadway of it all, does the drama seem a part of just we as theater people? Or is it that Broadway necessitates a certain high stakes that not many other industries have?
I think so. I think, yes, it is so expensive and the stakes are huge and the success rate is very slim. So everything is so heightened. It's either going to be a huge success or an artistic success. You're going to lose all your money or you're going to be Cameron McIntosh and become a gazillionaire.
Yeah, truly. It's very like it's the 1%. Broadway is the 1%. So it's either that you're making billions or you are SOL.
And yet we still do it. And yet people still do it. So there's something to be
said. Well, what's your answer as to why you still do it?
Why do I still do it?
Yeah.
Because I have no other skills. And so they still pay me to do it. That's not true. They don't pay me. No, they do. I don't know. It's something I do and I don't love all the process of it. Like, but it's when it works, there's a lot of joy and I'd rather do this than work at Google.
And you know what? God bless the tech girlies in Silicon Valley, but there's something about Beth Level in a Patagonia vest that doesn't sit well with me.
Whew, I'm glad I took it off.
Well, I do want to get to the podcast question that we ask our allies here at Beth Level, because you are someone who has done a lot for me. In fact, we ask gay people whose fault is it that you're gay? And I would say that Beth Level's performance in The Drowsy Chaperone might have done it for me, because Beth, I don't know if you know this, but the first Broadway show I ever saw was The Drowsy Chaperone. I was a closeted 17-year-old.
Bless your heart.
I went and saw that show, and you sang to me as we stumble along. I finish the show. I walk out to the stage door, and I say, I need a picture with a one Beth Level. And this 17-year-old closeted boy felt something, which was the true genius of a Broadway legend, and also the knowledge that one day I would be out and proud gaying out over Beth Level on a gay podcast. And here we are.
Bravo. That's an unbelievable story.
And here we stand almost 20 years later.
And I just have to say this. Congratulations.
Did I just win the Tony, Beth?
You did. You won the Tony Award for, God, this is crooked. Anyway, yes, you won the Tony Award for best I'm out and gay, queer, proud story. Thank you.
I hope it says that on the placard.
Can I get credit for it? You've made my day.
Well, Beth, you've truly made mine, and I just I will gush more. But since we have you on this podcast, let me ask you then, if you were one person who made me gay, question for you, Beth, who was your first gay? Was it someone on television that you saw as a queen you loved? Was it someone in your class that you bonded with? Who was your first?
There was, you know, this was the 70s, so coming out was a little more complicated, but we all knew that he was gay. Mm-hmm. We didn't really know what that meant. So my first gay crush was when I was in school in Raleigh, North Carolina, at a college called Meredith College, and it was an all-girls school. And so we had to, you know, find men from the community. And Eric, there was this gaggle of gays that walked into my life when we did Applause the Musical.
Of course, Applause the Musical.
And I was obsessed with him. And it's been, that's the history of my life since then. I've dated many gay people. I think I've made them come out as well. So you're welcome. But there's something, you know, I never want to be without gays in my life. It wouldn't be worth living.
And God bless you, Beth Lovell. If we're going back into the gaggle, I'm assuming that your all-girls school, whenever you do these productions, the gaggle of gays would come in. And I'm sure the girls felt so safe because you never felt like any of the guys were trying to date, right? They were just trying to do a 5, 6, 7, 8.
No, we just wanted to go over to see the townhouse that they had redecorated. And it was like, whoa. And the spread that you know, was like, damn, I have so much to learn. Teach me. So, you know, I've had a teachable moment from my gays ever since.
Well, I still feel that as a gay guy who admittedly doesn't have much style, I do learn from my community. And like my passions come from like being able to say a Broadway show in previews is going to win best musical. Like that's my skill, but I'm not like going to the town home and being like, you're welcome. I'm more like my husband did this.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Cool. You can still be gay. What my gaggle of gays also did was they introduced me to all things musicals, all things Judy Garland, all things Liza Minnelli, all things Bette Midler. Mm. So by my freshman year, I, you know, since I'm not gay, I was hugely gay adjacent.
Well, it's probably why so many gay guys wanted to date you, is because they felt there's definitely women that are the safe haven for gays, and they kind of get confused that this is my sister versus this is my beard. And right. What would you say was the age that you stopped dating gay people? Did you sort of see the light and realize, I want a man who wants to kiss me?
You'll know we are very good friends, but after I divorced my husband, who now is married to Steve. Adam and Steve, and we're all, you know, and then I married Adam Heller, who changed my life, and we're all one big modern family now.
I love that. So you not only dated a gay man, you married a gay man.
Mm-hmm. We were both really young, and I'm not sure he knew he was gay yet, so it was my fault, but we have two great kids, and we're in part two of our lives. So
that is incredible. That is Modern Family, the squeakquel.
It is Modern Family.
And if you don't mind me asking, how long were you married to your first hus?
Well, we were separated for a while. So I would say almost 28 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we're living in a time where there's so much more awareness of like what the sexuality spectrum is and just like how different people can live their lives. Would you give any advice, if asked, for someone who's like, okay, I was in a chapter with someone who now is really embraced who they are. Mm-hmm. How did you sort of find the love for him and then continued into the next chapter of your life? Do you have any advice for how to do that?
Well, how can you not love someone who has found their true authentic self?
Yes.
I would never ask someone to live their life untruthfully. So, you know, was it a rough year or so? Yes. But we came out of it both authentic and happy and a family.
I love that. I think there's not enough conversation about long-term relationships that end and then they continue to have love and respect towards each other. Because, you know, you hear about like 50% of couples get divorced and divorce is hell and then it's your enemy for life. But it's like we're allowed to grow as people mm-hmm. and have different phases of our relationships. I think that that's not, there's not enough nuance in like how relationships
I can hear you.
Exist and end and then continue as friends.
I hear you. Yeah. So we were really lucky.
God bless. Well, shout out to your gorgeous ex/baby's daddy. Mm-hmm. And speaking of our gorgeous memories and moments in life, can we talk about Drowsy Chaperone for a moment?
Yes, please.
I've heard Ariana Grande might be wanting to adapt Drowsy Chaperone into a movie. And what? Bob Martin says that the script is already written. So how do we harass the studio to ensure your casting?
That is a very good question. Are you serious? Why haven't I heard this? I usually hear things on the Rialto. Yes, but, you know, I had that experience with Prom. So if they're going to hire Ariana Grande, they're going to hire some fancy Hollywood person to play Beatrice Stockwell.
What was that like?
Idiots.
To... I mean, I fucking agree. But is that sort of like a harsh reality of Broadway? Is that when it does become Hollywood-y, then they sort of don't give respect to the original stars?
Well, again, it's a business. So who's going to sell more tickets, i.e. the Prom, Meryl Streep or Beth Level? It's math. It's show business. And, you know, we all accept it. We all knew that we weren't going to do the movie A Prom, but... we'll see about Drowsy, man.
Well, so Ariana Grande, she told Variety in an interview that she would love to see Avenue Q, Next to Normal, Spamalot, and the Drowsy Chaperone adapted for the big screen.
I love that. Thank you. That would be amazing.
It really would. And
can you imagine that as a film, the opportunities you could have
within the show?
Wow, you could really... celebrate. That is amazing.
Well, yeah. There's something about that show that I think I felt so seen in, because like the man in chair in a way is many young queer people, which yeah. is someone who is sitting at home enjoying, whether it's a cast recording or watching Lady Gaga at Coachella or whatever it is. It's like a gay guy that is just living his bliss and not worrying about what the world outside of his home feels about him.
Exactly. I think all of us, particularly in show business, have just a little bit of man in chair in us.
For millennials like me, our Broadway golden era was like 2004 to 2009. And this was a time where I got to witness you do Side by Side by Susan Blackwell, which I would say yeah. sort of radicalized a group of young gay people. You also did Obsessed with Seth Rudetsky, doing Pullbacks and Aerosols. Do you feel like our current era, are we in another golden era of Broadway? Or do you sort of miss the days of those like Drowsy Chaperone days?
I miss the days. It's so much social media now. No offense. But
none taken.
I like being in the, like doing that thing with Susan was so much fun. And I loved watching them. It's like you get to, like what you're doing with your gay ass podcast, you get to really know someone a little more than just a blurb on a screen or a text yes. or a TikTok or whatever. There's a lot of TikToks where I'd love to see just people being together and celebrating theater.
Well, I think it's also about, you're right, like connecting as humans versus just connecting as like credits or...
Being in the room together.
Yeah, does it feel different then now that you're doing old friends on Broadway? Does the energy of doing a show now feel different than when you were doing those shows, you know, 15, 20 years ago?
What's really different are opening nights, you know.
Yeah, in what way?
Because now it's all about social media. Like the last two shows, Lampika and Old Friends, the opening red carpet is before the show. So you get to the theater at whatever time, and then you have to get all blinged up in your gown that you've borrowed from somebody. And then you walk the red carpet, which is mostly social media people.
Hmm.
And then you discuss, answer questions, and then you go back and you change into your costume and get ready for opening night. And then after opening night ends, you get back in the dress and you go to an opening night party where, again, you have to more social media. It used to be opening nights, you'd get to the theater early because your dressing rooms were full of flowers and telegrams and notes from people. Not that our dressing room didn't have flowers, but it was more of, it wasn't about social media. It was about the opening night and everyone involved in that. So I kind of miss that. I miss getting dressed up after the show and then going to a party and just celebrating. Crazy for You, this is interesting. This was way back. During Crazy for You, my agent and my friend and my husband at the time, we all went to Sardi's and waited for the hard copy of the New York Times to come out. And I remember my agent reading the review for Crazy for You out loud at our table, where it said crazy something, I'm paraphrasing, Crazy for You was the rebirth of the American musical. And then we went to the Edison Ballroom and had, you know, chicken wings and danced. That was a memory.
Well, talk about celebrating. I mean, the amount of work that goes into opening a show, period. Ooh, but yeah. Then to see that hard in print, yeah. It's a smash.
It's a total huge hit.
And then cut to you, chicken wing in hand, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. And my parents were still alive then. So they went to the party, stayed for about 5 minutes, and then we put them in a car. They went to our apartment and walked up a fifth floor walk up and took the shoes off. That's like old school opening night Broadway.
Well, something else that's very old school, I feel like, is like orchestra size, which I don't know if people ask you about this, but I feel like there was such a appreciation for a big orchestra. I mean, even Drowsy Chaperone had a gorgeous sound in 42nd Street and all these shows. But how do you feel about the orchestra sort of now disappearing to like 6-person bands?
Yeah. Have you seen Old Friends yet?
I have.
Well, hello. That's 16
gorgeous.
Pieces. 16 pieces.
And by the way, I live in LA and I got to see it while you were here.
Okay.
And something about that orchestra with you, obviously, giving us a beautiful The Ladies Who Lunch, it makes the gay cells of my body vibrate.
I have used that word. Someone was asking, I said, there are moments in the show with the orchestra and with us singing all these harmonies that it feels like we're vibrating.
100%. Another vibrational moment is the Sweeney Todd segment when the set moves. Absolute vibration. When Leah Salonga, my dumbass, after the show, said to my husband, who was singing Mrs. Lovett? I was like, she was excellent. It was fucking Leah Salonga. She's so transformed that I had no idea it was her.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also, I might have been sitting a little far back, but I also did not know it was her.
Well, it's also a 2,000-seat house or something ridiculous like that. Yeah, she really transformed. I love watching her do that. I love it. Anyway, but with, let's say, Prom, the orchestra real estate at the Long Acre was so tiny that I think 6 people fit there, including the conductor. And downstairs in 2 random rooms in the basement were the drums were set up.
Oh.
And another, some horns or something. So they just watched the whole show on a monitor.
Did they ever get a wellness check? That sounds dark-sided.
They should have. We would go, you know, it was all soundproofed. It'd be like, Jared, are you okay?
Jared? I feel like a lot of Broadway performers require like a constant mental health companion because it is such a hard industry doing 8 shows a week, especially if you're a drummer in a basement, tiny room. Like,
yeah, it's like tough. How in the world do you, but that's not uncommon now.
Yeah. I mean, I know
the drummer for Old Friends is in the basement. They just couldn't fit.
And shout out to him. Shout out to him.
Rich. Yeah.
Rich, we send you all the good energy. And you know what? You might love being in a small room with the drums reverberating off the walls. We don't know your journey, but if you're not loving it, I have a Lexapro prescription with your name on it, sweetie.
Yeah. I have a Lexapro lick on stage. You imagine? Oh, God.
That's what we need. We need instead of water bottles planted, we need little Lexapro stations.
What's cool about Rich is Rich does his warm up, and he shares a wall with the hair department. So as we're putting wigs on, we hear like boom, boom, the timpanis, you know, getting pitched. It's show business.
Well, by the way, I want to congratulate you on Old Friends. It, not only is it your 15th Broadway show, but you were just given the Drama League Award nominee for Distinguished Performance alongside Leah Salonga.
And Bernadette Peters.
Does... the award nominations every year since we're about to hear the Tony nominations, does it bring up the same feelings as it once did? Or again, does it feel different because of social media or just because you've been along for the ride for a bit?
Yeah, it's not as terrifying as it used to be. And I was so ignorant about it. You know, Drowsy was my sixth show. So I wasn't really aware of the pressures of that. But I remember... you know, I got the Outer Critic and the LA Drama, and I was like, wait, what? And it was just overwhelming a little bit. I was, you know, oh, they want to see you on this. So now I understand how it rolls. And it's, I'm older. It's easy for me to celebrate everyone and not to lose my mind. Now I have a publicist with it, so I'm constantly really aware of everything. And so, but the award season, it is what it is.
Exactly. And the thing that I think is underneath it that I struggle with in this industry is that the industry is constantly trying to tell you what your value is and what your worth is.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, if you get a nomination, then you have value. If you don't, then you don't, which of course is not true. But it's the same thing that comes to whether it's reviews, whether it's just fucking being booked or not. I mean, for someone like you who has done all these shows, there have obviously been periods where you're between shows and yet you still have to feel that you have value as a performer and as a person.
Absolutely.
So it's like with Tony Awards, I mean, does it ever feel awkward backstage if certain people are nominated and certain people are not? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I can't remember the last show, prom probably. We were all nominated, but we were so close that if they weren't nominated, it was so easy for us to celebrate everything. And the show was nominated and then we got like so many nominations. So that didn't happen without everyone participating and bringing their talents to the show.
But so, also, I think the Proms cast was like really grounded, seasoned performers. And I'm sure that if you're doing a show with either a lot of inexperienced people or just like a monster of a personality, it could probably be World War III backstage.
Probably. Thank God I've never experienced that.
Yeah, you've had good coworkers throughout the years.
I really have. So I'm lucky.
Well, I think it's the thing about doing a show. It's why so many kids do theater in high school and then want to do Broadway. It's because there's like a drug of feeling like you're a family and a feeling like that's why so many closet cases do it too. It's because it's the place you feel so safe. It's a place
that your chosen family. And that's another thing
exactly.
Why I love theater so much. And some of my chosen family goes back to you know, 40 years and we're still a part of this family because I had a very small, tiny family and, you know, you were my family.
And 100%.
That's why I keep going back to it.
Well, I think that's partly why it's so a part of my humanity, because even though so my long story short is that I used to audition for theater and do a lot of shows in that world, but I ended up feeling like my path was not built for theater right now. I am not, like, there are not many Buddy the Elves out there. There are not. And also I was feeling like, you know, I'm singing 8 bars, 16 bars and no one's looking. And I felt like the impact that I could make on this world could be done somewhere else. And then if I go back to theater, which I still think will happen, that's beautiful. But I think that it's that feeling of family that draws you there. And when you see so much now, speaking of social media, I'm constantly triggered by these young people posting about their college acceptances and thinking if they don't get into 3 BFA programs, then they have no future. Do you have like any actual real advice if there's a, because you went to college, your undergrad was not in theater.
No, it was in social work counseling.
Right. So is there, and now, and so 15 Broadway shows later, do you have any actual advice if there's a young person who wants to go into theater about, you know, what they should focus on instead of which BFA they're going to get?
Yeah, that world has completely changed from when I grew up. You know, I'm really glad I had the path that I did, because I was way too inexperienced and immature, still am a little bit, the image, to possibly go to like a big fancy pressured BFA program. I needed to grow up. I needed to get some life skills before I become an actor, or that was my process. But after 4 years at Meredith and doing, they didn't have a theater major, they had a theater minor, and I had a mentor there, a teacher that just kept, you know, she's one of the reasons I am in my 15th Broadway show. And at the end of that, she said, why don't you go to New York? And I was like, no, you know, I'm a North Carolina girl. I've been to New York and it was terrifying. So I decided to audition for an MFA program at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, which was a safe, smaller program. And I was accepted into it. And I don't regret that at all.
Yeah. But
I think at 17 or 18 years old, I wasn't ready for the pressure of a fancy triple threat kind of, because I wasn't ready yet. So you know, you can't draw one answer, for lack of a better word, because it's really personal. But I certainly learned by experience, because I was able to do shows my school, but also a community theater, also North Carolina State. I had so many opportunities to learn who I was becoming as an artist, where I don't know how that works in a big fancy program. People say, oh, well, you know, you can't even get something until you're a junior or senior.
Ugh.
I am a big fan of smaller schools where you can really, really get experience.
Yeah, and learn what you're actually passionate about. Yeah.
Because there's so much pressure to what we do to work on Broadway. You know, first you have to get cast, you have to get the role. It's like, I don't know if I could stand that in school without just being in a safe pool, learning who I am and watching my peers and learning from them. But everyone, you know, everyone has their own journey, but there are a lot of good schools that aren't fancy, fancy, fancy.
Totally.
No offense, well, not that those schools are bad.
No, yeah.
Not at all.
I think
our past at old friends went to some of those fancy schools and I'm like, dang, I wish I could sight read like you could, but I can't. But that's
well,
okay.
That's, I think that's partly why people get so obsessed about it, because I told myself if I did not get into UMich, then I would not have a career. And then I went somewhere else and then it was like, obviously I've been fine. But like, I think you're right that you need a strong sense of self no matter what you do, but especially as an actor, and especially in theater, because it's such a fucking...
It's
always roller coaster.
No.
Well,
no.
There's also like, yeah, it's not only the no's, but like the replacements. Like when you did the workshop of Something Rotten.
Oh, right.
And then you were told that they wanted the character to be younger because she needed to get pregnant. And that happened to be Heidi Blickenstaff. And that same year you did a show with Heidi at the Old Globe.
Right.
Is that like, I mean, obviously by that point you had such a strong sense of self, but you still have to deal with like the dynamics of that.
Gosh, yeah. You know, and Heidi was so gracious. We did Dog and Pony at the Old Globe, and then the workshops for Something Rotten were happening. And then Casey Nicholaw calls and says, can I take you to dinner?
I'm like,
And he was so lovely. And essentially I was too old. And God bless the writers. The Kirkpatricks, they sent me the loveliest letter saying they had tried to change the script. And it was, you know, there was such value in that. I felt so appreciated. And Heidi calls me and she says, what do I do, essentially? And I said, if I am going to give this person B to anyone, it would be you. So thank you for taking care of her in your fabulous hands. And she did.
And I love that they treated you with humanity. During
It was just a love letter of you're fired. But, you know, they didn't have to do that. It didn't, yeah. You know, David Merrick didn't do that. You were just out the next day. So I was really, and you know, this always happens in my life. Something else happened that something rotten would have gotten in the way. So
right.
I don't know what it was. I can't remember what it was.
But see, that I haven't told this story in the podcast because it sounds catty, but I think that it's when I did Elf, it was 2014 and it was a non-union tour. And I thought that the rest of my life was going to be set because I was getting to play this big part. And my dream was to do a big show. I never led a show and I had the best time. But before one performance, I had like literally tripped and hit my head the night before we like drove a full 8-hour day to open up in Fort Worth or something. And before the show, I started to feel a little faint. Long story short, I didn't know if I should call out or not. I ended up doing the show. It went beautifully well. Of course, the producers were there. People had flown in for it. And instead of treating the situation with a sense of humanity, I kind of felt like I was treated like a prop. And I ended up finding out the next year they did not want me to do the show again because I had, fainting, I was purely having an anxiety attack. And because of that one moment, they did not trust me to do the show again, even though I had never called out. And there was something about that experience that was like, it was, of course, painful. And it was yet another rejection in the business, which I'm very used to. But I think a part of it was like, I felt like I had gone to such a high height of feeling from that show to go to such a low that it made me lose my sense of self for a moment. And of course it led to something else that led to something else that got me to here. But I think that it's like, man, it is. I just remember not getting a phone call. And then finally finding out what had happened because of that one moment. And I was like, oh, so we're not allowed to be human. And it really, it gave me like,
it hurt your feelings.
It hurt my feelings, Beth. But I think that now I can stand and tell you this, not as like a fuck those people, but more as like a, you know what? It is a business. And if I had let that stop me from doing anything ever again, how awful would that have been? But instead, it was like a lesson. And now I get to be here a much fuller formed human who, of course, has done a fucking lot of therapy. Well, but I think that it's like, you know, what an interesting life as like an actor and an artist.
I think if you ask every artist if they had a moment like that, there'll be something in their lives that is a common thread for all of us. A rejection, a, you know, oh my gosh, I could write a book, but I'm still here.
Thank fucking God. Now, since we need to make sure to give the due that it is due for old friends, just to let the listeners know, if they're thinking about a Broadway show, the cast is nutso.
Nutso.
In addition to Beth Level, in addition to Leia Salonga, Bernadette Peters, Gavin Lee, that cutie Kyle Selig.
He's such an asshole.
I know, right? Ugh. I truly have never met him, but yes, anding. He's so cute. He's so talented. But the thing about the show that I find to be so exciting is that you are seeing people like you who have spent their whole careers trying to live up to the writing of Stephen Sondheim, be able to play on the playground of all of his incredible works. In fact, you have said something in an interview that says, I haven't worked with Sondheim, so I was just so, oh gosh, please, I hope he would have liked this. However, if I were to ask you, if you're at a bar with Stephen Sondheim, what are you two gossiping about?
I don't know. Probably what he's working on now. I don't know. I try not to be like stupid fan, high-pitched. So, Steve, I don't know. I don't know. I try to find out, have human discussions with him.
Do you think that's partly why you...
Just like, I don't know what I'd say.
Of course. But do you think that's partly why you've worked with such great people? Because you don't fangirl, you just treat them like a human because you yourself are a human that wants to create with them?
I hope so. You know, believe me, it took a while to feel like I was Bernadette Peters' peer. You know, it's like, sure, let's stay out of our way. Is that okay? It was like a lot of that energy. And she's just a fabulous human being. So I got over that. But yeah.
Was it just time that did that? Or was it a drug?
Time and, you know, becoming chosen family. It takes a hot minute.
So Bernadette feels like chosen family now?
Yeah. Yes. She said, coming off stage last night, she said, well, I pulled a Beth Level. I went, atta girl.
What does that mean?
It means she tried to find a new laugh in something and it got it. It was like, yes!
Yes! That must feel amazing to have Bernadette find a Beth Level.
It did. I said, now I'm going to try to pull up Bernadette Peters and like cry in something so truthfully and beautifully.
And have a singular way of pronouncing vowels.
It's so true.
It's so true.
Are there any other Broadway legends that you consider family that you're shocked that they are family?
I'm sure there are. I can't think of a single person right now.
I mean, Brooks Eshmanskas.
Oh, yeah. He would be my gay husband. Someone asked me who would be your ideal co-star. And they expected me to say someone like someone very famous. And of course, it's Brooks. You're cut from the same comedy cloth, except he's braver than I am.
Is he?
Yeah, just a little bit. But man, I learned so much from being in the process with him. I learned not to edit.
I need to hear that.
Yeah, not to walk into a room and, as opposed to editing, throw everything you have up against the wall and see what sticks. That's how I work with Casey Nicholaw. And he just kind of sits back, and Brooks does the same thing. Sieber does the same thing. Just come in and make choices, strong and wrong, strong or whatever. And we'll see what works. And when you have writers like Bob Martin, and it's easy to do easy, but yeah.
Well, I find as a neurotic Jewess, I sometimes over edit because I'm worried about, you know,
I don't
think good enough or
every actor does it. Or, you know, that voice in your head. Oh, that's too much. Oh, that's not right. But if you think about the interesting performers you've seen, I seriously doubt that they're editing.
Which is, I think, a testament to like them trusting their guts. You know, it's like,
and that takes a while, unless you're some of these ridiculously young, talented people who already have that skill or that ego that has taken me forever to learn to trust myself.
I think it's both. I think it's skill and ego. And I'm like, were you at a Jesuit school that told you like what happened? Because I was not drinking the water fountain Kool-Aid of you deserve everything. And some people really were given that drink.
Yeah. I'm envious at times. I mean, I've had to work really hard to let Beth Level live and celebrate. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And Beth obviously, you know, deserves to celebrate. And as you are embarking on this Broadway show, and I know you have a milestone birthday coming up, is there anything like in this next chapter that you would like to either experience or something that you want to focus on for this next part of your gorgeous life?
Life or career?
I think either.
Yeah, because they're hand in hand. I feel, you know, when I don't work, a part of me is not activated. So I do not feel like I am done at all. I would love another Tony Award in my life. God, I would love the experience of giving birth again. I love, I have like 3 musicals down the line. I'd like to do all of those. And I would like to live marital bliss with my fabulous husband, Adam Heller. I'd also like a vacation. I'd like to spend a little more time I'd like to take a fancy cruise. I'd like to stick around and really celebrate my children and their growth and my chosen family.
If you could do a big ol' vacation with your family.
No, I don't want my family to go with me. I don't want my kids to. We'll do, because they can do their vacation. But Adam and I were talking. There's a very fancy, beautiful cruise line called Crystal Cruise that I did 2 cruises, and I was the entertainment. So it was like a free cruise, and I just had to sing Broadway tunes. I would now like to go on a fancy cruise to some places in the world that I have not been and not have to sing Broadway show tunes. Unless I was asked at dinner. It was like, well, as we stumble along on life's funny journey. Yeah, spin, spin.
And then while you're singing, they say, would you like more Chardonnay? And you say,
yes, please. Yes.
As we plumble.
You know, when I sang one of the first crews, you know, you learn things. There were very few, I wouldn't say the majority of the people in the audience spoke English.
Sure.
Here I am singing Stumble Along, and they're like, what is she singing? Sing New York, New York. So now I know if I do go back, I've got to be a little more.
Listen, there would be one gay guy in a corner table, me weeping.
I didn't see him. It didn't go like, my gaydar did not go off.
Listen, well, maybe one day we'll find ourselves both celebrating our accomplishments, very different accomplishments, but we'll be on a Crystal Cruise line, and I'll just give you a nod of the glass as you've been asked to sing as we stumble along.
Thank you.
Wow, Beth, it's all so, so good. And before we get to the final podcast question, I just want to make sure that I get any other lingering thoughts that I have for you. Beth Level, lingering question number one. What's the gayest musical you've worked on?
It was a play, Standing on Ceremony. It was off Broadway, and it was about gay people in relationships.
So oh, that's gay.
I played a lesbian.
Lesbian!
Oh my God. And then I played a bigot. That was fun, but that was very gay.
From lesbian to bigot, the Beth Level story. What about, was playing Donna Sheridan in Mamma Mia, was that something that really affirmed your soul as a gay icon?
Not really. You know, I found mostly the people in the audience for Mamma Mia came dressed in boas. They were women of a certain age from all over the world that knew every single lyric. So no, Mamma Mia was not, that wouldn't be it. I would think maybe prom would be the gayest. And, you know, especially after we went on the Macy's Day Parade, and especially now that it's being done everywhere, which thrills me beyond belief. And people are sitting and staying and watching the whole prom. And indeed, it is changing lives.
I was going to say, that's the type of show that actually makes a big impact.
You would not believe some of the talkbacks we would witness.
I'm sure it must be really unique for someone like you who has done all these shows on Broadway and then to see them either tour or to be done in schools across the country. I'm going to give a shout out to my younger brother did The Drowsy Chaperone when he was a senior in high school. And this is like a straight guy who just got bit by the bug when he did a show with me. And I flew to St. Louis to see The Drowsy Chaperone. He tap danced, "I'm Robert the Bridegroom." And then the girl who played The Drowsy Chaperone just killed it. And I felt like such a lucky person to say that I saw Beth Level do it in the original cast, my first Broadway show, and then to see my younger brother do it in high school. It was like it healed something in me.
Oh, man. The Drowsy Chaperone in prom. I must get 2 notifications a week to send shout outs all over the world congratulating them for doing Drowsy Chaperone, especially Drowsy Chaperone.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I just I want to say thank you. And before we officially sign off, give you the final podcast question. Beth Level, we ask on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Besides me?
Besides yourself.
Besides myself, Carol Burnett.
Shout out.
Carol Burnett.
And it's a gorgeous answer.
She came and saw old friends in Los Angeles. So I was able to, she also came and saw Drowsy Chaperone and previews of the Amundsen. So I have met her twice, and she's just such a part of my history.
Yes.
And she hugged me and went off about Ladies Who Lunch in such a sweet way. And so I'd save her. Yeah, let's save Carol.
An incredible answer. And whenever I see her, whether it's like in a photo or she just had a great appearance on Hacks, it's like how lucky to actually see her work, but for you to be in her orbit is just something that makes my gay heart sing. It feels good when Beth Level and Carol Burnett are in the same room.
Oh, and that was one of those moments you were talking about. Was I intimidated? I am not shy, but I was just could hardly speak to her. I was so just awestruck. by her. So yeah, we'd have to save her.
Well, one day I'll be able to compare notes when you get to tell me what it was like with Carol Burnett, and then I'll get to tell you the one day I get to meet Whoopi Goldberg, who was who's the one that I need. She's the one that I want. Well, Beth, I just want to quickly butter your biscuit by telling you that this 17-year-old gay boy who is standing outside of the Marquee house before seeing his first Broadway show.
Exactly where you are.
He says thank you for giving the incredible performances you have given, but also for being the person who will take a photo with a closet case after a show, make him feel seen, and make him feel that there is a beautiful life to lead, even if he's not exactly sure who he is or what is about to happen in his life. At least he knows there are people like Beth welcoming him in to the gorgeous gay side.
Absolutely.
Beth Level, thank you so much.
Look at you. Well done. You live your life.
Oh man, Beth Level, that is gonna make me tear up.
I'm getting a little weepy.
I'm so grateful to you for doing this gay ass podcast, and I'm very, very happy for you and all of the people like me who get to witness your genius. So Beth, thank you for coming on and for everything.
Thank you. Yeah, really, just making me all droopy.
I'm feeling the exact same way. Could you please tell our gorgeous listeners who are so lucky to have listened to your interview where they can see old friends, and if you would like to plug anything else?
You can see old friends at the Samuel Friedman Theater on Broadway, 47th Street. And hang on for the other announcements.
God bless Beth Level. We love a good tease. Well, I will continue to be a fan, and I will see you on the Crystal Cruise.
From your mouth.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and thank you to Beth Level for making me gay. I just cannot explain to you how special it was to talk with her. And if you enjoy this episode, it would mean the world if you are subscribing on YouTube or on your podcast platform. Leave a 5-star review if you have not yet done that. And if you would like more gay assery, go to Substack. We do bonus episodes there every single week. And this week is a horny one with Thanos, the delicious Greek man who I've been following on Twitter for years. And this man does not hold back. Speaking of theater, he was on tour where he was a big old slut across the country. So that is ericwills.substack.com, and you'll see full-length confession hole episodes there, my glory hole talk show, which this week features Rich Burns, one of the hottest daddies you have ever seen. That's at ericwills.substack.com. And thank you so much for being here. I love you from the bottom of my hole. Stay gay. Bye. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.